Thank you, Jim. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. We have an action-packed show today. Not 1 second of downtime.
No, it's wall to wall. There's no downtime, Wendy. You're right. So much stuff that you said, let's give away our big giant prize early on today instead of making people wait around.
Yeah, see, that's what we usually do. It's usually the last half hour of the show. So for the people who listen right at 10 o'clock, we have a four-pack of tickets to the Blackhawks convention. It's happening July 26th through the 28th. It's at the Hilton Chicago, of course, and it's the 12th annual. There will be current players, alumni, alumnus, alumni.
Both. They'll have both.
Autograph and photo sessions, Q&A panels, exhibits, interactive games, and oh so much more. You can visit Blackhawks.com to purchase your passes today, or you could be what caller right now?
Well, caller number 18, obviously, Wendy.
Obviously.
In honor of the great Darcy Rota, the Blackhawk player whose hair...
Born in the Bronx, New York.
That's Rota Morgenstern. Although when they married and his name became Darcy Rota Morgenstern, it all made sense. But he, of all the Blackhawks, Wendy, if you'll remember, Darcy Rota had the hair most like Mowgli from the Jungle Book.
And that was a plus.
That was... Right. It would stymie his opponent.
312-981-7200. We're looking for caller number 18. You'll walk away with a family four-pack of tickets to the Blackhawks convention, which is oh so fun.
Yes, so much fun. Real quickly, last night, the White Sox fell to the Cubs.
I don't hear you.
Really?
I don't think my headphones are working.
Yeah, just cover your ears for this part. It evened up the season series at one game apiece, which is what I was hoping for. I wanted each team to walk away with one win.
You're too nice.
The Cubs now in first place by a half a game. The White Sox, just 3.5 out on the wild card, were in pretty good shape going in July.
Wasn't there another game?
Later on in the season.
Oh.
There'll be two more games.
At
guaranteed rate field. Yeah.
You said it right.
Yeah, I did
time.
Say it right.
Very proud of you.
Thank you.
Hey, should we talk to our winner?
Yes.
Who is going to the Blackhawks convention? Hi, what's your name?
Hi, I'm Socorro.
Hi, Socorro.
Hi, Wendy.
You a big Blackhawks fan?
Yes.
Who's your favorite player?
Darcy Rota. Darcy Rota. Say Darcy Rota.
It's hard to pick, but I really, really like Duncan Keith.
Oh, sure. I am 100% with you.
Yeah, that's a good call. Have you been to these Blackhawk conventions in the past?
You know what? I went about maybe 4 years ago.
It's a good time.
My grandson, and he loved it.
All right. Well, you're going back, Socorro.
Great.
We will get all your information, so hang on the line, and we will set you up. It's a family four-pack. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Who? Darcy Rota?
Darcy Rota, Wendy. Google Mowgli from Jungle Book,
then
imagine him in a sweater with the number 18 on it and the Blackhawks logo, and it'll all make sense.
You'll have another shot at winning these family four-pack passes again tomorrow, I believe. And if you don't win them and you're freaking out and you want to just get in on it, you can go to Blackhawks.com.
In just a little bit, our friend Jaco Marcelino joins us, Wendy.
Can you do me a favor and talk the whole interview?
The whole way like this? Hey, Jaco, what's up with you?
I got your What's Up With You right here.
He, of course, one of the founding members of Sha Na Na. They're playing in Chicago. We will check in with him next. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Do you have the Summertime Blues?
I do. Jaco Marcelino, can you name that tune?
Summertime.
We have a winner. Congratulations.
So I'm cruising around Chicago trying to find Jaco's Pizza.
It's got to be there somewhere.
You know, it's the best.
Yeah,
I got to thank you guys for taking care of the weather.
Yeah,
you know,
sorry about
that storm, and it's going to be a nice, clear night.
Yes.
Will you explain?
Well, it may not be raining.
All right, now this is a free show. Am I imagining this?
I, from what I understand, it's a free show, so I can get you good seats.
7:30 tonight at Village Green in Addison. The big news is something I'm holding in my hand right now. You guys have put together this 50th anniversary commemorative edition LP and CD, and this comes out tomorrow?
Yes, and that vinyl is an aqua blue. It's a very cool package.
We've not opened it yet.
My kids have opened it. I have to be honest with you. They're 16 and 20, and I'm hearing Sha-na-na flying out of their bedrooms, and I'm like, way to go.
That's cool. That's cool. Well, you know, I saved a lot of good nuggets over the five decades, and it's pretty cool. It's a nice package, and they get the whole CDs. Now, do your kids have vinyl?
Yeah, they both have record players. I don't even think they do CDs anymore.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. No.
It's all vinyl.
Jocko, are you somebody who believes, we've heard this debate back and forth, that true record purists insist on vinyl. Where do you stand on that?
Well, you know, I love vinyl, but I have a big collection. But, when I need to get a quick song, I'm afraid I go straight to Apple. I'm just iTunes and
the digital
download
version.
It for 99 cents.
Yeah.
I have a scolding, wagging finger up in the air right now.
Wendy.
I know. That's bad. It's bad. But, you know, I did own up to it.
I heard somebody say a year or so ago that the greatest sound in the world is that 3-second sound of when you put the needle down on the record, and the record hasn't started playing yet. You just hear that little...
That hiss.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yes.
Hiss pop.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Well, it's cool you put... Why did you go vinyl with this? Just a throwback because it's the 50th anniversary?
Yeah, and you know, we were on a real nice big package. It's Pat Boone's gold label, and it's... You know, it has a lot of good elements in it. And since I've spoken to you, we did a 50th anniversary return to Bethel, the original site of Woodstock, which was a fantastic evening. And to be back at the sacred grounds of Woodstock, it was very, very, very cool.
You get a little tingle when you're there, Jocko? What does that do to you when you're in that same exact place?
Well, that was a long time ago. And then on the other hand, it's like, that was about a minute ago.
Yeah.
So it really varies.
Now you were born at Woodstock. Refresh our memories on that story.
Well, our international exposure was Woodstock in terms of national and international. We had done, maybe a dozen shows or something, and this was the first time we had such a worldwide audience, especially when they kept our song in the film. The documentary and how big that was, because they were kind of cut it out, but they had previews in L.A. and in New York, and we got standing ovations, so we were glad for that.
That's so cool.
What does that do to you, though, Jocko, when you go from relative obscurity to all of a sudden being one of the acts that everybody's talking about? Does that mess with you a little? What does that do to your head?
Oh, it was very cool, and I was, 19 years old, and the club we got booked at was actually Jimi Hendrix came down like three nights and brought a bunch of people, and including the producers of Woodstock, and we got hired right away and went got $350 for the 12-man act.
Wow!
The check bounced.
It bounced.
Yeah. We got a dollar to be in the movie.
Oh my God.
I don't know who really got that dollar. I want to investigate this, because I don't remember getting my 8 cents.
Although, who cares? This is every 19-year-old's dream who has a band put together. You're playing some show, and then all of a sudden, hey, there's Jimi Hendrix, and hey, we're playing Woodstock.
Yeah, and then in the TV show, we got to meet and play with so many greats of all kinds of entertainment. We did Chuck Berry and Bo Diddley and Bobby Rydell, but we also had Ethel Merman. It really was a variety thing, and we really learned how to lay down some tracks. We laid a track down for James Brown, who called me brother and gave me five on my drum track.
Wow,
so it was pretty cool. Pretty cool to mingle with all these rock and entertainment gods.
At 19, that must be surrealistic. You must just be saying, how could this be happening to me?
Yeah, well, that's 50 years ago, so, uh-oh. Boy, am I old. No. Boy, am I young.
Right.
Two other original...
I'm young for my age.
Yeah, that's the way to say it. Two other original members, founding members of Sha-Na-Na, are joining you on this show. Donnie York will be there and Screamin' Sots, Scott Simon. Is it amazing to have a friendship, a professional friendship that lasts that long?
Or are you still friends?
Well, maybe you're not still friends. Sorry if you're not.
yeah, we don't talk to each other. I haven't actually met those guys.
Good.
But I understand that, it's... They're long-term, all these guys, and we have side guys who have been here 10 years, going on 20 years. And we all get along pretty darn well to be schlepping around the country. I say the worst part of the gig is getting there. But once you get there and get to do a show, it's
sure.
It still rocks me.
Yep.
Well, I'll tell you some more information tonight. There's a bunch of people texting. It's called Rockin' Wheels. That's this whole event going on tonight. It's free to come. Bring a chair, food trucks, beverages, and more. Great music. Can't wait to see Sha-Na-Na. It's right across from the Village Greens. So that's Addison
so
tonight.
You got to say be there or be square.
Oh, that's right. And Grease for Peace.
Be there or be square.
Right.
In a Brooklyn accent.
Do it. Wendy, you can do this.
Be there or be square.
Yes.
That's pretty good.
Very intimidating.
I can't top that.
All right. So you have this awesome album and CD. How did you determine what songs went on here? Because you played a lot more songs than are included on this album.
Oh, yeah. Oh, well, basically the ones that I liked and that flowed together and that were still had... sounded good, you know.
Yeah,
I grabbed most of these things in time, or whatever it was, like 30 years ago when digital came. I made sure I saved them.
Genius.
And and then we did a good job mastering them.
Jocko,
we slowed down tracks, that kind of thing.
Oh yeah. If you had a time machine and could go back to the 50s, who's the one performer you'd need to see?
Well, you know, I never saw Elvis.
Oh.
I saw the Beatles. I saw James in his prime. I never saw Elvis, so I'd probably have to say Elvis.
All right. How come you never saw Elvis? I find that shocking.
I don't know. We do a ton of Elvis. We just never crossed back.
Oh, that's too bad. Mm. Uh-huh.
thank you very much.
If somebody wants to get this great commemorative album CD set, it's commemorative edition, Sha-Na-Na's 50th anniversary. Best place to send people is at Sha-Na-Na.com.
It's Sha-Na-Na.com, and there's a link that brings you right to it.
Well, sweet. It's so nice to talk to you again. And listeners, really, head out to Addison tonight. It's at the Village Green in Addison. It's a free concert. You will be rocked, you will be rolled, and it will stop raining.
Oh, miracles, all of those.
It already has stopped raining. You did a good job.
All right.
And, Jocko, we just personally want to say thank you. You sent Wendy and myself a very nice package of Sha-Na-Na gear, which we wear proudly. So thank you for that. That was very nice of you.
Good. My pleasure.
So nice.
All right, well, keep it rolling there, buddy. Nice to talk to you, Jocko.
All right, guys. Have a great one.
Thank you as well.
Jocko. Jocko Marcellino.
You did not talk like that.
For my own health reasons. I didn't want to upset him.
You made me do the...
Yeah, I did, didn't I? How about that? Jocko Marcellino, of course, one of the founding members of Sha-Na-Na, celebrating 50 years of singing incredible doo-wop music.
And a turquoise LP is pretty
cool. You don't
see
that very often.
So that's tonight. Go to Sha-Na-Na.com to find out the information. But really, we have so many texts coming in. It's right in front of the Village Hall tonight. It's free food trucks, drinks, adult beverages, I believe. It's called Rockin' Wheels. And have a great time.
This sounds so up your alley.
I know.
I'm shocked you're not part of this.
It's a weeknight.
Is that what it is? Yeah. One night later, you would have been all over this.
What time does it start? 7:30.
7:30?
Mm.
Tempting? It's pretty tempting, right?
I might be going, and I'm not kidding. The kids have been playing the Sha-Na-Na records, wearing their shirts.
Right.
I'm like, do you even know who Sha-Na-Na is?
Did they?
Michael knew, but Dylan wasn't sure. He goes, no, but I like it.
Yeah.
And I know who they are now.
Yes.
So maybe we will head over there.
Surprise them.
7:30 tonight. All right, Sha-Na-Na.
All right.
News time right now, action-packed show. We're also going to be talking to the producer of that 16 Shots documentary. Have you seen it yet?
I've not seen it yet.
I think it dropped last Friday on Showtime. time, and I want to watch it with other people in my house, so I have been waiting for them.
Yeah.
But if they don't watch it with me tonight, I'm just watching it on my own.
Right.
It's about the Laquan McDonald case, and we will talk to him after 11. David Hochberg stopping by. And Dean, where is he this time? London?
Is he here?
Hello.
I can't remember where. I know he's overseas.
In London.
Yeah.
And so Patrick McDonald will be filling in for him. We'll talk about movies that are opening. It's action-packed, I'm telling you.
Well, he went down to dinner in his Sunday best. Excitable boy, they all said.
He's an excitable boy. I guess he'd be our excitable boy.
The excitable boy. The original excitable boy. Hi.
Hochberg.
David Hochberg, everybody.
Vice President of Lending of Team Hochberg. Yep.
How's the team doing? Is the team having a good season?
Yeah, we're crushing it right now. Rates good. Are at...
Yeah, they dipped, right?
Yep. So we have you on a rate watch, and if they dip a little lower, we're going to float your rate down and get you a lower rate.
Wasn't there talk just yesterday of the possibility of a higher interest rate?
The short-term rates from the Federal Reserve said that they might... they kept it... They basically did not touch short-term interest rates, and they said that in the future... they might have to cut it to stimulate the economy. So the market has reacted favorably today.
Sure.
And because everything works in advance of the cut. So when they cut it, if they do cut it, the market will have already built in the cut, you know, the reduced rate. So right now, last time I was on, I said rates haven't been this low in a year. They're even lower than the last time I'm on.
But now, are they lower than what they originally were? Because I know that we had rate increases like four times.
Yeah, but they're back in the high threes, low fours.
Oh, well, that's good.
Right? And before, they were in the low threes, mid threes. Mm-hmm. And everybody's like, well, you know, I'm going to wait for it to go lower. I'm like, what? Do you hit your head against a wall? I'm like, what the hell's wrong with you?
These I'm waiting for 1%.
1%,
yeah, no, I'm waiting for another eighth of... you know, we've got people right now. I'm waiting for another eighth. I'm like, what do you do for a living? Well, I'm a school teacher. I'm like, oh, so you're really tied into the bond market and everything that's going on in the global economy that impacts bond, you know, bond futures and bond rates and what the 10-year bond does. I'm like, if it's...
Already lost me.
Is it a good rate? Well, that's the point, right?
Well, what's 1/8 of a point difference in a mortgage payment?
It depends on how big your mortgage is. It could be $7 a month. It could be $15 a month. But we have some people that were saving like $500 a month. Okay,
oh, that's big.
And they're at like 4.25, and they're like, well, you know, or pick a number. It could be 4.5. They're like, well, I really want 4.375. I'm like, you're saving $500 a month,
right?
I'm like, you really want to save $508 a month? I'm like, what? I'm like, really?
Right.
Okay.
But I think you, David, say in your own ads, if your number is in the fours, if you want to take a look.
If you have a rate that starts with a four or higher, I screwed up the ad. I heard the ad the other day, and I have to redo the ad. It says if your rate's in the fours, that means people in the fives and sixes don't call me. That's wrong. If your rate's at least starts with a four or higher,
then
the
you
ad
call.
Should say, you should definitely call. And I'll tell you who we're getting bombed with right now are people that took out FHA loans. That have FHA loans and put down less than 10% in the past 5 years, you have PMI on that loan for the remainder of your loan. Like if you put down less than 10% on a 30-year fixed FHA loan within the past 5 years, you have PMI on
private
that loan.
Mortgage insurance.
It's not going away. It used to go away after a certain period of time. It's on there if you put down less than 10% on a 30-year fixed loan. Now, if you put down more than 10%, which is great, you'll have it for only 16 years. It will not go away for at least 16 years. So what we're doing is we just talked to the guy, Kevin, who's helping you.
I'm refinancing again.
Right. But we're saving you money and getting you out of HELOC that's popping. But he talked to a guy that's in a 3.25% 30-year fixed loan, big loan amount. He's paying $300-some a month PMI, putting him into a slightly higher rate, paying off a bunch of debt, getting him out of PMI. He's not going to have his 3.25, but he's not going to have his PMI. And he's going to be paying off $60,000, $80,000 worth of debt. We're saving them over $2,000 a month. So it's not about the rate, folks. Everybody, well, I got my 3.25% loan. I'm like, who cares?
It's the payment.
It's the monthly payment, everybody. That's what it's all about. So we had to walk them off the ledge. We're like, all right, we're going to put you with something in the high threes, low fours. Okay, who cares? Here's your payment. Here's what you're paying now. It's simple math. Mm-hmm. Here's what you're paying now with PMI, principal and interest PMI. Here's what you're and all your credit card debt and all this other nonsense over here that you've accumulated for whatever reason. And here's what your payment's going to be over here at a slightly higher rate. Oh, by the way, it's $2,000 less than over here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you want to stick with what you got with the nice, sexy rate, or do you want the slightly higher rate with no debt?
Right.
And he's like, oh, well, nobody explained it to me like that. I'm like, yeah, so you're saving over $2,000 a month.
Yeah.
So boom, yeah, he's going to take a slightly higher rate. But he's not going to have PMI, and he's going to eliminate, he's going to roll all his debt into his mortgage and free up $2,000 a month.
Here's the thing, what's scary. In a perfect world, you know, when we bought our house 22 years ago, you take out a 30-year loan, and realistically in your head, you're thinking, I only have 8 years left, right, and I own the house.
Yeah.
But things happen, life happens.
Well, here's what happens. You get married, and we all know that Jimmy is very expensive, and then you have two kids, which we all know are very expensive.
Yeah.
Then you have to call PermaSeal to do your basement.
Yeah.
Which you have to pay for that. Then you have a heating HVAC unit goes out. There's $5,000 to $7,000. Then a water heater goes out every 5 to 7 years. Mine's on the verge of dropping dead. Everybody's like, there's no hot water. I'm like, so take a cold shower, right? So I got $200-$300.
Girls don't take cold showers.
I know. I got $200-$300 going into a water heater eventually, probably five. All this stuff costs money. A car goes down. Somebody gets sick. Somebody loses a job. You've got a very stable industry here, the radio industry, right?
Yeah, I know.
Very stable.
Oh, yeah,
Jim and I
stable.
Were out of work at the same time for a while.
Oh, I remember that. Okay.
Then you want to buy a kangaroo.
And then you want to buy a kangaroo and a llama, and they don't get along, so you
but
need...
But what do you tell somebody, right, like, you're just kind of rearranging the furniture, and it works,
that's
so
it.
You can...
It's a monthly payment.
But you're kind of living day to day. You're not thinking about the future. What do you tell people like that?
Well, here...
Like, they're worried about that.
Well, right, and I tell people, would you rather struggle like you're doing now with 3 cents in the bank and worrying and getting paid on Friday and it's gone by Tuesday and you're struggling to get to the next Friday and until the next paycheck hits, or you have equity in your home. I'm not saying take the money and go to Joliet and go to the boats and blow it in Vegas or go to Atlantic City. I'm not saying doing that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying, listen, life happens. Okay, somebody loses a job, somebody gets hurt, somebody has to take care of a family member
who is older,
right? All this stuff happens, okay? God forbid we tell Johnny he can't go to Cooperstown for $2,500.
Mm-hmm.
God forbid we tell Sally she can't take the hockey trip to Detroit with the other 800 families that are making, you know, that trek up there because Sally's got to play travel hockey. That's
mm-hmm.
fine. Okay, I was a pretty decent baseball player. I sucked, but I played house league because I didn't qualify for the travel league, right? And if
right.
I didn't qualify for the travel league, my parents didn't have the money to send me on the travel league. But now we can't say no to anybody, and
right.
everybody's got to continue to go. Listen, it's a fact of life. I'm not saying spend money you don't have. People have already done that. When they come
to us, you're in trouble.
That's when they come to us. Thank God rates are still low. Thank God the equity in your home has come back from 07, 08.
Mm-hmm.
Thank God we could get you out of a situation. We took a guy at WGN. He's listening right now.
Mm-hmm.
His wife was sick. He was sick. Had to take time off of work. Self-employed. Ton of equity in his home. He's been sitting in a 7.625% loan.
Oh, my God.
For the past 8 years. Okay? He finally got healthy enough. My guy Scott Ellis is working on him right now. We're taking out like $50,000 out of
his finances
home.
Or his health.
His health went down, he wasn't able to work.
Yeah.
So they have to live off of credit cards.
Yeah.
So he hears me all the time on WGN radio right now. He's listening right now. We got his tax returns. He said I finally got 2 years of good tax returns because I didn't make any money for a long time
mm-hmm.
because I was out with a major injury. Thank God he's better. We're like, great, so let's take a look at your tax return. Long story short, he has the income now. He has a ton of equity of his home. We're blowing him out of his 7.62, whatever, 7-plus rate.
High.
And, well, he was trapped.
Yeah.
And we're putting him into something substantially lower, paying off 50 G's worth of credit card debt, freeing up $2,000 a month.
Right.
I mean, when I say these numbers, $2,000 a month, and I start doing those ads, we've saved listeners year to date $888,000. We've taken out a paid off debt, $888,000 annually on the annualized basis. We've lowered people's payments cumulatively $77,000 a month. We've taken out, helped people extract over $5,000. I find after 17 years of advertising, I'm like, you know, we should probably add that up. It'd probably sound really good on the radio that people could relate to it. And I added it up. I'm like, holy crap, we've taken out $5 million
yeah.
through May of the homes of people's equity to pay off all of this debt.
Right.
And has saved people $77,000 a month.
And if it doesn't work for you, don't do it.
Keep moving.
David makes money from this as well. But if it's saving you money and it looks good to you, do it. If not, I heard you on the radio. That's
right.
Where I called
WCKG.
And said,
I saw you looking in my yard.
Yeah.
That was a bad time for David.
But
if it's not good for you, don't do it. But really, you're here to help people. And
yeah.
How do people reach you?
It's very simple. 855-560. David, 855-56 David.
Our operators standing by to take their calls?
24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I'm going to be on later tonight with Pete McMurray. We started.
Hey, buddy.
Hey, buddy, we started a new segment.
I love it.
And he's bringing in Lebanese food. I don't know exactly what that is. He's got some baba ganoush badoush or whatever the heck it is. Yeah, and but he's got hairy knuckles, and I hope he brings it in from the place that somebody else makes it.
Is that a stand-up comic, Harry Knuckles?
Well, yeah. Zanies this week.
Yeah, well, that's his stage name. But I'm going to be on with we started this Ask the Mortgage Man segment here.
Everybody has questions.
Yep. And I was on two Thursdays ago. I was on for an hour, and the phone lines lit up.
With Pete?
No, yeah. I was on with somebody that's no longer working here. Thanks, Bill.
Right. I love it.
All right, let's take a break, and we're going to come back and talk to you, all right?
Yeah, I appreciate it. You cannot help yourself.
It's Hochberg. It's starting to heat up. How do people read 56David.com or 855-56-DAVID? We'll be back after these.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. David Hochberg's here. He's the vice president of lending of Team Hochberg at Homeside Financial. How come you're only the vice president at Team Hochberg?
That's good enough. President? I'm fine. Yeah? I guess. Right.
If the president has to step down, would you assume his office?
I'm good where I'm at.
All right.
I'm very comfortable.
That's fair.
A lot of questions involving reverse mortgages. People are confused about it. People think, why would I do that? It's helpful to some, isn't
it? It's helpful for some. It's like morphine. It's a great drug for some. It's not good for everybody, okay? And we had a lady who's listening right now. Mary is listening right now, who called me because her dear friend heard something or saw an ad on the television, and she saw an actor that she recognized that drove a fast car back in the 70s and 80s and called in and thought that she was going to talk to this actor and got stuck in a hot box call center out west, and they sent her all this paper. She didn't understand it. She was about ready to sign it. I said, do me a favor. She lives in the western suburbs. We have an office out in Downers Grove. I'm like, why don't you stop in, bring the paperwork? Turns out, she never got any paperwork, was ready to close the loan, never got any paperwork, but she was ready to close the loan.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how you do that, but she was ready to go to close the loan, cancel the loan with the TV lender, and is now starting over with us because her dear friend stopped her from making a mistake by going to these television lenders that you don't know who it is. When you call in, you're going to go into a hot box call center, and you don't believe me, call them and see what happens, right? And their sales individual, you don't know who you're talking to. Listen, you want to call me? I'm on the radio, you know, 7-8 different stations here, right? I've got a show on another station. I got in trouble for saying to I got in trouble over there for saying go to WGN.com trip to register for the Prague. So I got my hand slapped this morning for saying that. I'm like big deal. So long story short, work with somebody that you know and trust because
I trust you. I'll give you that.
I know you.
That's good. Refer to what I said before the break. So the but it's a great product when used effectively and administered by a trained mortgage professional. That's all I'll say. And if you want more information, give us a call, 855-56-DAVID. I tried to get my parents into one.
You did?
Yes.
Yeah.
And they didn't qualify because their home the value came in lighter than what my parents thought their home was worth. They had the counseling done. We ordered the appraisal. They were ready to go. If the home appraised for what my folks thought they were, I would have put my father and mother, may she rest in peace, in a reverse mortgage. Oh. So you think I'm going to put my parents into something risky?
No.
Absolutely not.
All right. That sounds right.
That sounds right.
Yep.
And are you still paying people's rent?
Yes, where you have to register to win
this
the
is a sweepstakes, right,
David? It's not,
it
a contest,
is not a contest.
No. We just had a contest to go to Prague. The winner will be announced tomorrow on the Steve Cochran Show.
This is a sweepstakes.
This is a sweepstakes. Big, big difference. You could go to 56DavidWinRent.com.
Yeah.
And if you want to win, if you want to enter to win a free mortgage payment, 56DavidWin.com. And if you would like to talk about how to possibly lower your interest rate, I'm no longer at Pearl Mortgage. I'm no longer at Townstone Financial. I am at Homeside Financial.
Right.
And if you want to reach Team Hochberg, who's no longer at those previously two mentioned companies, you could give us a call. We have a lot of people looking for us. We're at 855-56-DAVID. I was criticized. I had some constructive criticism by a listener.
Oh, what happened?
She said, she made the recommendation, you should also say 855 and spell out what David is in numbers. So here, it's 855-563-2843, 855-563-2843, or go to 56david.com. mostly our entire team is still intact, and we love to work with our past clients.
All right.
It is kind of a pain in the butt to get things organized for a refi, but I'm thinking years ago, because now everything's pretty much done email, and it's because that makes a lot of people hesitate, too, to call, because it's like, oh, I don't want to go through all this stuff.
I'll tell you what we've gone through to automate, not us, but what the industry has gone through to automate the entire process. Everything's done electronically signatured now. Mm-hmm. You know, that was a major upgrade. Before, the FedEx people and the DHL people made a ton of money. Yep. UPS, schlepping it back and forth and signing and highlighting. We don't do any of that. You just do electronic signatures, comes right back in to our system. It's all secure, safe. There's a portal where you upload PDFs of bank statements, pay stubs, W-2s, tax returns into a secure portal in a password-sensitive system that you set the password.
Yeah.
You know, the borrower. So the borrower, if we want to give you a copy of your credit report, hey, go into the portal, pull it down. Hey, a copy of your appraisal, go into the portal, pull it down. Hey, you know what? We need a W-2. You forgot to give us a W-2 and updated pay stub. Go into the portal, upload it, boom. And now there's automated stuff where we could even get your all your income information by pushing a button if your employer is on a certain system. We don't even need pay stubs and bank statements some of the times.
Oh,
It's all automated. It's unbelievable. In the past 18, 19 years I've been doing this, the advancements that have been made, and a lot of it came from the collapse in 07 and 10 and the technological advancements within the entire, you know, society as we see it. It's gotten a lot more technologically advanced, and the banking industry and the mortgage industry has implemented a lot of those technological changes to make it easier for borrowers to secure mortgages.
Typically, how long does it take start to finish, the whole process?
It could take as little as 15 days.
Wow.
No.
You know, it takes longer usually?
Well, no, it could. I mean, if you're super organized, we've gotten loans done in 14 to 16 days. Typically, it takes 3 to 4 weeks.
All right, that's not bad.
You know, then some people who are out of town and travel, it's travel time now. People are, which is fine.
And you got to send the documents back right away. You can't wait a week like we do.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's a lot of it is contingent upon people like Wendy, when you're like, hey, please sign this and get it back. And then you're following up Wednesday and Friday and then the following Monday.
Right.
And
disorganized.
Then no, it's fine. And they finally get it back. It'll take a little longer, but the process is really not that big of a deal.
And something you recommended to me, and when I first reached out to you, you could help us the next time you couldn't. My credit was challenged, definitely. And you talked about, you turned me on to Credit Karma, which I went to, and you can keep track of things that are on there. There were a couple of mistakes, and it's free, and you don't get a kickback from it. It was just great advice to help enhance your credit. So,
All right. That's David Hochberg. He's no longer at Baker Square.
Right.
He's no longer at the Wiener Circle. He's at Homeside Financial. He's the vice president of lending there. You want to call 855-56-DAVID or 855-563-2843.
Thank you, Bill.
Thank you, David.
Go to our website, 56david.com.
I will go there right now.
Perfect.
You're the best. Thank you.
All right. Coming up, the stories that matter with Jen DeSalvo from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.
What the local news put out there.
An individual with a knife coming at the officer.
That is not the story. This boy been shot, and it's a lot of bullet holes in him.
I'm just going
All right, we are going to talk about 16 Shots. It's a Showtime documentary that I believe dropped last Friday. Am I correct?
Yes, it first aired last Friday.
Okay.
Now it's streaming.
And I cannot wait to see it. Jamie Calvin is with us. You're a journalist. You're one of the producers of 16 Shots. Let's just go right to the beginning. How did this documentary happen?
So I did another small project with Rick Rowley, the director, at a time when the Laquan McDonald story was, you know, a huge focus in the city. And I had published the first article in February of 2015, based on the autopsy.
That's so long ago. You forget
so long
that.
Ago. Yeah. I mean, and the incident itself was October 20th, 2014. And really, a key step in the process. Think about how many incidents, how many times we've read stories like this in the paper. And the police narrative, officer shot in self-defense. And kind of turned the page.
You accept it and move on.
And so these are really, really hard stories to report. And I got a call, was contacted through a colleague maybe a week after the incident by somebody in law enforcement who said, you know, that police-involved shooting that was reported last week wasn't at all what was reported in the paper. It was horrific. There's dash cam video. And he was also able to provide, you know, enough, not an exact address, but enough information that I was able to track down civilian witnesses. So, you know, if it were not for that, you think about what this whole episode has meant in the city. It's completely transformed the city, transformed our civic life. Unimaginable we would have had the mayoral election we just had absent this. I mean, this is the Laquan McDonald era.
Right.
But if it wasn't for a single individual in law enforcement, we probably wouldn't know the name Laquan McDonald.
So then when you got that information, what did you do then?
Actually, the first thing I did is kind of, I've often done that with this kind of reporting. I actually went to the site at 41st and Pulaski on the southwest side, which is kind of this amazing, and at night, you know, and the incident occurred sort of between 9:30 and 10 at night. It's simultaneously this place, Chicago, the city of broad shoulders, you know, their truck yards and the expressway, the Eisenhower. But it also feels as desolate as the far side of the moon.
Yeah.
You know, you can see the skyline in the distance, but it's an industrial area. It clears out at night. And really, so the, you know, the question was, what happened here? And the next steps were to find the civilian witnesses who really are heroes in this.
Yeah.
There's a gentleman, Jose Torres, and his son Xavier, who were driving on Pulaski, blocked by the police action that was taking place, and had an unobstructed view of the shooting. And when I found Jose and appeared at his doorstep, he, you know, the most decent, hospitable man, he was horrified to have me show up. How did I know?
Yeah.
He was afraid of police retaliation. He was looking over my shoulder to see if, you know, there was a SWAT team behind me. And, but he couldn't help, such a decent guy, he couldn't help but tell me what he had seen.
Did it match what we saw?
And so for me, that was a, there were two key moments long before the video came out. That was one, to have found a completely credible civilian witness who was able to describe precisely what we ultimately, you know, a year later saw in the video.
Yeah.
And then, you know, once I had found Jose, I was all in on the story. I knew something had really happened, because you get tips and sometimes they don't, you know, you drill a dry hole. And the next step was to get the autopsy report. The autopsy was performed the morning after the shooting, so the 21st, 8:30 a.m. But it takes, you know, a couple of months for an autopsy to be finalized and to be subject to a document, you know, Freedom of Information Act request.
So that's available for public consumption, an autopsy report, maybe a dash cam. Are those things allowable?
Well, that's what we ended up fighting over. Autopsy reports, once they're concluded, are public information.
They are.
And before it was finalized, I went to President Tony Preckwinkle.
Yeah.
I was a source, and I've known her for many years. And I asked her if she could find out the sort of top line content of the autopsy. And we tell this story in the film.
Mm-hmm.
And we are neighbors on the south side. And I went out for a run in Washington Park. And it's probably early January, around New Year's, dark, snowing. And President Preckwinkle pulled up in her vehicle and sort of beckoned me to get into the car. I got in the car, and I don't even think we exchanged hellos. She said 16 shots front and back.
Really?
And that was the first time I heard any, you know, think about that phrase, 16 shots. It's been almost like a musical composition for this era, you know, young activists shouting it in the street.
Yeah.
It's the title of our film. It was the title of my original article. But that's when I first heard it. And then about a week later, I was able to get my hands on the document itself. And again, as I say in the film, autopsies are amazing documents. So it's kind of a narrative of what happened.
Because of the complexity of the detail? Is that what you're saying?
You know, right. So I spent days just poring over the autopsy and figuring out how to report it.
Yeah.
I can't remember how many pages it is, but it's, you know, it's a thick document, and every wound gets a full description.
Yeah.
Where the bullet entered, what bone tissue organ it passed through, where it exited. And for me, actually, poring over the autopsy, imagining what happened on the basis of the autopsy, and then trying to, you know, as I did in an article that appeared in Slate, February 10th, 2015, to render it for other readers. That was more impactful for me than the seeing the video, because the video was kind of, when it finally came out, for all of its huge impact, for me it was kind of corroboration of things that I had other means of knowing. And I remember just my hands trembling when I finished that article. It was just so so appalling, and the knowledge. And this is what I think made this such an explosive episode, that the police department and the city had all of this information, including the video, from the first moments. While the boy is bleeding out on the ground, they have witnesses, both police and civilian. They know the condition of the body, and they put out a, you know, what we now know to be a utterly false narrative. You know, if people, I'm sure, remember this. The story was from a police union spokesperson on the scene, and then a press release that went out that night within hours of the shooting. Mm-hmm. Aggressive, agitated young man with a knife lunges at police officer. Police officer has no choice but to shoot him in self-defense, and the implication was one shot to the chest, and he dies sometime later.
Did anyone question that when that came out? Because I just went, oh, that's just too bad. That's tragic.
I mean, it was, you know, for me, I actually remember the incident, and I remember discussing it with colleagues. This is, you know, I report on police abuse issues, and this is something, just on the face of it, seemed kind of implausible. That, and this is a really important thing to remember. So initially, a call went out from dispatch. Somebody's with a knife is trying to break into trucks in a truck yard. And actually, the police response, until Officer Jason Van Dyke, some minutes into this unfolding action, arrived, the police response was what we would want.
Yeah.
So the two officers, Gaffney and McGilligott, came to the scene. They see this kid. He's kind of wandering around. He's got a knife, but he's kind of in a bit of a daze, disassociated. And instead of ratcheting up, they saw there's nobody around. He's not threatening anybody. They were patient. I mean, if that were my son, or if I lived in that neighborhood and somebody's wandering, this is what I would want the police to do.
Mm-hmm.
And we have footage in the film. There's another video, and it's from external surveillance cameras on the Greater Chicago Food Depository that's there. And you can see the prelude. The first chapter of this is Laquan McDonald's walking purposefully down the street. Officer McGilligott is out of the squad car and maybe 4 or 5 paces behind him with a flashlight. And Gaffney is driving the police car and, you know, a couple of car lengths. And they're kind of accompanying the kid. Neither the officers nor the boy know that they're accompanying him to his death.
Yeah.
But, you know, the police response was completely appropriate. And so, to your point about first reading the story, I do remember sort of just having it nag on me that in the reporting, they say that the responding officers called for a taser.
Yeah.
They didn't call for massive backup. They called for a taser. They didn't have a taser. And we now know from their testimony that they thought that that was sort of the outer limits of force they might need, and they didn't have a taser in their vehicle. So how you go from that to a dead child on the street was but again, you know, I get a lot of credit for breaking the story, but I, were it not for the nudge of a whistleblower, I would have turned the page.
Jamie Calvin is our guest, freelance journalist, one of the producers of 16 Shots, which can be seen right now on Showtime. It's the story of Laquan McDonald and the shooting. We'll pick this up in just a moment. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
You're broken down and tired.
We're talking with Jamie Calvin, and I am so sad we're going to run out of time because Bill and I have a million questions for you. You're a freelance journalist, one of the producers of 16 Shots, which you can see now on Showtime. Officer Jason Van Dyke, Laquan McDonald, we were talking about this whole situation. What would have happened, I wonder, if Officer Van Dyke would have just come right out and said, I can't tell you anything other than I panicked, I overreacted, I am so sorry. How would that, and would that have changed anything?
I think that would have changed a great deal. you know, I sat through the trial, the month-long trial, and nothing I saw in the trial, including Officer Van Dyke's testimony, very dramatic towards the end of the trial, suggested any plausible explanation except that he had a kind of...
Was in fear for his life.
Well, he had a psychological episode. He lost it. There were 9 other officers there, you know, and the criteria for the use of deadly force is, was there a reasonable, you know, fear of, and 9 other officers did not find it necessary to shoot. He wasn't uniquely positioned relative to the young man. There were other officers who had kind of closer encounters. The thing was completely under control. They had basically corralled, Laquan McDonald. He had nowhere to go. He was shying away, as we all know from the video, mm-hmm. from the officers. There was nothing aggressive about him. I mean, he had a 3-inch knife in his hand. But we also know, and I think it's probably the case that even under the circumstances, if Van Dyke had shot once or twice,
mm-hmm.
and this case wouldn't have evolved the way it did. Most of the shots were fired when the boy is writhing in pain on the ground in fetal position. We've all seen that. So, I've tried to imagine what it would have been like for the city if instead of what we've had, which has been a full force argument from the police union and from the defense, that what we saw in the video, I mean, I saw an execution of a child, was good police work, was justified, was within policy, was legal. That has been so polarizing for the city. Whereas, you know, if the defense had been, my client had a psychotic break, this is an utterly regrettable thing. You know, you could also have, they could also have marshaled a defense that really raised some issues about the failures of the police department
right.
to provide officer wellness, you know,
yeah.
mental health
yep,
resources,
things like
to
that.
Intervene appropriately. Van Dyke had a problematic record that nothing in his record predicted this terrible event, but it certainly was a basis for somebody to intervene and say, you know, what's going on with this guy?
Was it ever determined, Jamie, if either that night or in the next few nights, in a short span of time, the police officers got together and came up with a different story?
Yeah, so that's really the story we tell in the film. And, I mean, we know that the officers on the scene, including Van Dyke, went back to a nearby police station, and along with union representatives and detectives, were all in a kind of bullpen together, looking at the video, talking. You know, there was the second trial, the conspiracy trial,
yeah.
in which several of those officers were acquitted. I think it was a travesty,
yeah.
given the evidence. I think part of what we still have to better understand, if we're really going to make the kind of changes that the city aspires to make, is I think I've written a lot about the so-called code of silence, you know, which is really a matter of narrative control. It's less a matter of silence than of enforcing a narrative. And, you know, I think one of the paradoxes of the second trial, where they charged conspiracy to cover up the murder, is when a culture is that pervasive,
yeah.
you don't need to conspire. Everybody just leans in. You know, nobody had to conspire for officers on the scene while the boy is bleeding out on the ground to shoo away witnesses, civilian witnesses. Jose Torres and others told me that they were told, get out of here. Nobody interviewed them. They just witnessed a homicide. Nobody took contact information. That wasn't a conspiracy. Mm-hmm. You know, I think the officers who, as many of your listeners will know, officers soon after the incident went into a nearby Burger King and sort of commandeered the surveillance equipment.
Right.
That, you know, so it's just the way it happens, you
yeah.
know. And so the senior folks who, there's always, this is called the street chief. There's always a senior officer who, on any 24-hour basis, is sort of the on-duty incident commander
mm-hmm.
who gets a call if there's something, you know, of this nature. When that person comes to the scene, I'm quite sure, based on my reporting, that they're not coming to find out what happened, to investigate what happened. They're coming to figure out how to justify what happened. which is just a very different mindset.
But Chicago's not unique in that, right? Chicago's that goes on everywhere.
Chicago's not unique. And, I mean, Chicago's got its own really dramatic history,
sure,
you know, over the last 50 years with respect to these issues. And I think, you know, I think it's actually even perceptual. I mean, if you're, and think about, you know, the pedophile crisis and the church.
Yeah.
This, I mean, I think there are, I've really tried to understand this with some sympathy for officers. First, for the line officers, the rank and file, when you have to risk everything mm-hmm. to break ranks. And but for the higher ups as well, you know, for the good of the department. That's mm-hmm. you just have a narrative in your head. This is the department can't stand another scandal.
No.
Ferguson, you know, at the time of the Laquan McDonald shooting, Ferguson was in complete turmoil. And so that shapes perception for people. I mean, within 24 hours of the incident, in Gary McCarthy's office, the then superintendent, he and police brass reviewed the, you know, the report from the street chief, so-called, on the incident, and looked at the video and found it a justified shooting.
Mm-hmm.
Jeez. What do you say to the officers that might be listening right now or who have seen 16 shots on Showtime? What do you say to them? Do they feel betrayed by you? What do you want to
you
say
know,
to them?
I have, it's interesting, I have complicated, I mean, I have first, I mean, not to spout the cliches everybody always spouts about the police. I have great regard. Somebody once said to me, the deputy commissioner of police in New York, former deputy commissioner, said, and I've always sort of tried to hold on to this, in a democracy, there's nothing as good as a good police officer, and there's nothing as bad as a bad police officer. And really, the work that people like me are engaged in, and in my case, it's, you know, as a reporter, is really directed towards enabling the good police officers to do their jobs
sure.
without being impeded and seen by the public in light of the bad officers. And, you know, often when there are incidents like this, the defense of police and military are and paramilitaries to say, well, it's a few bad apples. And there's, you know, that's not quite right, but it's not quite wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, you know, a relatively small number of corrupt or violent or racist officers can do immense damage if they operate with impunity. If they know that, and the public knows that, they're not going to be identified, disciplined.
Yeah. 16 shots. Please see it on Showtime. It's available now. Jamie Calvin, journalist and one of the producers, 16 shots. We'd love to talk to you again sometime. We have so many more questions we couldn't even get to.
I would welcome the opportunity.
Thanks, thank Jamie. You. Greatly appreciated. We'll take a quick break, get you some news, and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Thanks, Jen. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. Our guest is our friend Patrick McDonald, film critic for HollywoodChicago.com, tour guide of the Chicago film tours. The season has started.
Yes, it has. We are in the midst of it, if you will.
How do people get in touch? And for people who don't know what yes. this is you take people to all the great movie scenes, movies that have been shot in and around Chicago, and
yep.
you show them and you tell the stories.
Exactly. Analyze Chicago film history, ChicagoFilmTour.com or 312-593-4455.
Do it one more time, because I have promised to take this tour for the last
right.
5 years, and I swear this is the summer. What's the number?
312-593-4455.
All right.
It seems like, tell me if I'm wrong, but it seems like the last couple of years, it's been mostly TV work done in and around Chicago.
Yes.
Dick Wolf's productions.
Yes. Yeah, the last 5 years. But with exceptions, Dwayne Johnson's Rampage.
Oh, was that done
yeah,
there?
And
that's a film, not just having a bad day.
Yeah.
Sometimes
exactly.
he gets a little ornery.
The day he beat me up.
Yep, that was a horrible day.
He's from a wrestling family, too.
Yeah.
So,
is that part of the tour now where Dwayne Johnson shot his film?
Yes, I'm adding stuff as we speak. We're Office Christmas Party and then the Rampage movie.
What's the one site that people just can't wait to see, and when they see it, they're like, I'm in the same spot where they shot this?
Reasonably, Wrigley Field is always the big draw.
Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Yeah. But as far, that's a good question. I don't know. I think people have their own favorites.
Yeah.
There is a segment of the Blues Brothers that was shot near Chinatown that to me is just incredible.
Yeah.
The old Schoenhofen Brewery.
Oh, yeah, right.
Where the car drives to the orphanage in the movie. They use that alley right
there. Yeah.
And that's cool.
Like, yeah, it's totally cool.
There it is.
Totally cool.
Has this been a slow summer for movies? It seems like usually this time of year you got a couple movies that are breakout hits right out of May and into June, but I don't know about this year. Is it
yeah,
working?
Yeah, it's hard. I think Dark Phoenix did okay business. There's nothing really a buzzy. There's not a buzzy movie right now, you know. Men in Black didn't do the
no.
type of business that they wanted. That a tired remake of Shaft. Ugh.
Yeah.
Gosh.
They have officially run out of ideas. Why do you have to remake Shaft?
Well,
seriously.
This one was done more comedically than the other ones,
yes.
right? So they were shooting for that angle.
Well, what happened was,
the
you
funny
know,
Shaft.
Funny Shaft,
funny
they called
shaft.
It.
He doesn't stick it to the man. He makes the man laugh.
Yeah. Talking about Shaft.
Shut your mouth.
Talking about Shaft.
Seriously, though, have they run out of ideas?
Well, I mean, it's all either remakes or reboots or sequels or prequels, right, for the most part?
Well, you know, the summer is the season because, yeah. you know, you don't want to spend a lot of time marketing a new piece.
Yeah.
That's for the fall. That's for the Oscars.
Yeah.
We don't, in the summer, we want to get butts in the seats and yeah. we want to do it with familiar names.
I read that the only movie that's broken through that's original is the movie Us, the horror movie Us. That's the only one that wasn't a prequel, sequel, or reboot.
That went on DVD or digital last week.
Oh, I haven't yes. seen it yet. I have yeah. to see
Wendy,
it.
You
I know.
Gotta
it's
see
strange.
It. So good.
I like The Last Black Man in San Francisco, too. That opened last week here.
I don't know that. What is that?
It's a lyrical poem to the legacy of San Francisco as a middle-class town.
Yeah.
You know, now it's not a middle-class town. It's a wealthy town. And it's driving anybody at a certain income level out.
Is this a documentary or drama?
No, this is a
What's
drama. The Last Black Man in San Francisco.
I've never, this is the first time hearing of it.
Wow.
All right, I'll find it.
Yeah, it came out last week.
So is there, as the summer progresses
mm-hmm.
and we continue, is there a couple of titles to look forward to that will change this tide, do you think, or not?
Toy Story 4.
Toy Story
Toy
4,
Story
I hope.
4.
Well, today, yes. I think Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is going to send some hearts aflutter.
DiCaprio and
yes.
Brad Pitt.
And new Quentin Tarantino, 50th anniversary of the Manson murders, and basically...
I'll see that.
Yeah, it's around that whole thing.
Like other Tarantino... I don't know if you've seen it yet, but I'm curious. Like other Tarantino movies, he takes a section of history and kind of gives his own spin on it. It's not always historically accurate.
Right. I think it's
there?
A fictional story.
Oh, it is, right.
They make up a TV show that Brad Pitt's a part of. It's all about that neighborhood where the murders happen.
Oh.
So
that could change it. That could be the
yeah.
big movie of the summer.
That could. It could. I mean, that you know, Far From Home's coming out, Spider-Man.
Oh, right.
4th of July
yeah.
weekend.
Who's Spider-Man, though?
The Lion King.
Holland.
Tom Holland.
Okay. Right, yes.
Right.
And it'll take up with the story that happened in Avengers Endgame.
Yeah.
Oddly, he disappeared for 5 years, but went back to high school. How did that happen?
So they'll address that.
Oh, spoiler alert.
Yeah,
every time I get used to a guy playing Spider-Man, they recast it and they
exactly.
put in a different guy. Is that going to happen with Tom Holland?
Well, who knows? You know, it's a long, long journey.
He's legitimately, though, like a young guy. Like the other guys who have played Spider-Man have been a little bit older playing younger guys,
yeah.
but Tom Holland's a younger guy.
Yeah, they went back to the roots where, you know, he was a high schooler that got bitten by a radioactive spider.
Yeah.
And his energy is really good.
I feel bad, Patrick, for people. Like, my wife has no interest in superhero movies at all. and all the movies, whenever the year starts, people go, here's the big movies of the
yeah.
year. They're always superhero movies. What do you do for those people?
You make sure you're checking every weekend at HollywoodChicago.com to
right.
see where. No, The Lion King's coming out, too. The
live action.
The live
version.
Action. You know, this live action thing that Disney is doing, very odd.
Mm-hmm.
The Dumbo live action was odd. The Aladdin mm-hmm. live action was odd. I'm anticipating that The Lion King live
You know which
action.
One was
I don't
good?
Like it.
You know
I haven't seen him, so it's not fair of me to say. But
you just don't like the idea of
yeah,
it all?
Yeah, not really.
I don't either.
Can I tell you which one was really good?
Yes.
The Jungle Book a couple of years ago
yes.
was really, really good. John Favreau directed it.
Yes,
I love
yes.
him.
So good.
That was well done.
Bill Murray was Baloo. Christopher Walken was in it. It was really fun.
What was he?
He was King Louie. Christopher Walken was. He was so good. All right, Patrick McDonald here, film critic for HollywoodChicago.com, tour guide at Chicago Film Tour. Go to ChicagoFilmTour.com. We'll pick this up next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Patrick McDonald is here, film critic for Hollywood.
That was my old nickname. Chicago,
the 60-Minute Man. That's personal. Film critic for HollywoodChicago.com, tour guide over Chicago Film Tour. We just mentioned Toy Story 4. It's finally opening.
Yes, it has.
It looks really good. Please tell me it is.
It is really good. It is voices, of course, of Tom Hanks, Tim Allen, Joan Cusack, Annie Potts from the previous Toy Stories.
And Wendy's boyfriend has been added to the mix.
Keanu.
That's right.
Cool breeze.
Right. Joined by Tony Hale, Keanu Reeves, and the comedy team of Key and Peele. Hanks,
boy, they're everywhere now.
Mm-hmm.
Hanks plays the cowboy whose days are numbered because his Bonnie, his new owner, is not playing with him anymore.
Oh.
So he stows away in her backpack as she goes to kindergarten.
Mm-hmm.
And at kindergarten, she creates a new toy called Forky, which is voiced
a toy fork.
And he spends the rest of the movie, or a big part of the movie, wondering about his existence.
Isn't it a spork?
I think it's a spork, yes.
Oh, okay. That's a difference than a fork.
It is. Technically, it is.
It's a spoon and a fork. First time I ever saw one, KFC.
Yeah.
Best to do coleslaw with, as they say in the movie.
Patrick, Toy Story 1 was really good.
Yes.
2 was really good. 3 was really good.
Yes.
This is very rare that you see 4 movies in any film sequence all good.
Yes. You know, this has cleared a $1.9 billion in gross for all 3 movies, so this one's going to add to it. You know, interestingly enough, they're only the 5th biggest animated franchise after Despicable Me, Shrek, Ice Age, and Madagascar.
Oh, that's a surprise.
And all 4 of those, you know, they had really good starts and then just...
it fizzled.
Yeah, but this has been strong the entire way. 4.5 out of 5 for Toy Story 4.
Do you know, when they made Toy Story 2, their original intent was to make it go direct to video.
Correct.
And they sat there and they watched it and they went, this is way too good to just go to video. Let's see what happens.
And Hanks and Allen were big on that.
Yeah.
Tom Hanks and Tim Allen really said to Disney, you know, you're going to lose some money if you don't put this out.
Right.
So.
And they've all been good.
Yep.
It's very, very rare.
Very rare.
All right. So 4.5 out of 5 for Toy Story 4. And that opens tomorrow. The next one is a movie I'm not familiar with. What is Echo in the Valley?
Echo in the Valley is a documentary about the California sound. The California sound, of course, was invented by the birds, Mamas and the Papa.
Good.
It's so good.
Yeah.
Jacob Dylan, Bob's son.
From the Wallflowers.
From the Wallflowers goes and interviews all these people. Even Ringo Starr, you know, tells about the Beatles' infiltration into that whole thing. Truly an incredible film. All the survivors talk. David Crosby and Michelle Phillips especially are candid about their days in Laurel. It's Laurel Canyon, what they're talking about. That's where all the rockers live.
Mm-hmm.
It focuses on the birds, the Mamas and the Papas, Buffalo Springfield, and the Beach Boys.
Mm.
Yeah.
And, quite a lineup.
And actually, Brian Wilson is in there. He must be on new meds because he's actually animated.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's
so.
Fun. Good.
Wait.
I'm not disparaging.
Animated
this.
Like cartoon form?
Well,
or?
Animated like he's talking about.
I'd like to see
making,
that.
Good vibrations.
Pixar worked on it, didn't they?
Good.
Wow. This is in limited release, I'm guessing?
Yes. It's going to open at the Music Box here.
I have to go see it.
And Jacob Dylan's going to perform on Friday night. So if you're a Wallflowers fan, you better get out there.
That's excellent.
Again, I have to bring this up because we interviewed Jacob Dylan when we worked at Q101, and they really stressed, do not bring up his dad, Bob Dylan.
Yes.
Bill had the best way around it.
At the end of the interview, I said, I know you don't like to talk about this, but what is it like to be the son of Greg Allman?
And the whole band died.
Everybody enjoyed it. So it got out of there alive.
And it's funny because somebody makes reference in the movie, and he kind of goes, hey.
Really?
But he can't say, shut up, David Crosby. You can't bring that up.
Right.
I think so they've rekindled what they were missing.
Yes. So. Oh, did they? Yeah.
I hope he's over it.
Another movie opening this week that I don't think you have seen, but we can talk about a little bit, is the remake of Child's Play.
Yes.
Chucky's back?
Chucky's back. Interestingly enough, the creator was kind of shuffled aside on this. It's a new studio, MGM, and Universal will not put out Child's Play for the first time since it all started. And that's been a point of controversy, but it's Aubrey Plaza and Mark Hamill will be doing Chucky's doll.
He does the voice that was originally
Brad Dourif.
You got it exactly.
He actually, Mark Hamill, aside from being, I mean, everyone knows him best as Luke Skywalker, but he's been doing voices
on the regular show. He skips. He talks like this.
Oh, does he?
Yeah, he's been doing that.
He's done the Joker on the animated Batman. He's really good with voices.
Well, you know, he had that accident, bad car accident in the midst of his Star Wars days.
Yeah.
And pretty much decided to go behind the mic after that, you know, because he wasn't getting the roles and everything like
that. He's Chucky? How do you go from Luke to Chucky?
He's a voiceover guy. He's the Mel Blanc of our days.
All right, so here's the question that I'm not the first or I won't be the last to ask.
Yes.
Did Child's Play need to be remade?
Well, you know, for a quick buck, sure.
Yeah.
I don't know what more you could do with that concept. I mean, especially, but it's a familiarity thing. It's just like anything else. You don't have to market. You don't have to even give it to critics to preview.
You know what you're getting.
They did not, they didn't give a preview to us.
I heard Aubrey Plaza, she's been on almost every late night talk show over the last couple of weeks. So the story she keeps telling is that this is a Chucky for this generation, in that the old one was just a doll or a puppet or an action figure.
That's true.
This one has a digital component, which makes it even, believe it or not, even scarier.
So now you can run around.
Yeah, you can program
it. Do a dance number. And...
Right, there's more dance numbers than Child's Play now. Tommy Toon worked on it behind the scenes. Wait till you see what he's done with it. You're going to love
it. Their duet is amazing.
All right, so you have not seen it. You can't review it.
Yeah, I can't review it, but I can say if you like Child's Play, go.
That was pretty scary. I liked the first one.
It was actually pretty scary.
It's a really good horror film.
Patrick, my family wants to take the movie tour this weekend. What are the times again, and where do we...
Well, you'll have to call that number.
312-593-4455.
Yes, Wendy, that number.
Or go to chicagofilmtour.com.
Exactly. So
we only have a couple of minutes here, but I have to ask you this. There's a movie opening soon called Yesterday with one of the most original premises I've ever heard for a movie. A guy wakes up and all of a sudden everybody on the planet has never heard of the Beatles.
Correct.
Only he has.
That's believable.
That seems very feasible. All right. So he decides through means that he can cash in on this and he becomes kind of a pop star singing Beatles songs. So you have an interesting question.
Which song, if that happened to you, okay, if you woke up and you're the only one that knows Beatles songs, which song would you introduce first?
In My Life.
Because
it's beautiful.
I have that on my list. But I was thinking Hey Bulldog.
Really? Why?
Because it has the hook, exactly. Yeah. And it's a real forceful rock song that could get out in the firmament really quickly. But I had, that was, In My Life was definitely on the list. I had 8 days a week and drive my car.
So when selecting that song.
Yeah.
Would you choose the one that you would think would have the most star power, the most hit ability, so that audiences all of a sudden would hear that song and say, well, not now, this is a master songwriter and performer.
Right.
Is that the criteria you
use? I think the criteria also has to be, you have to take into consideration the modern music scene.
Piggies. Mm-hmm. Bill's going to pick Piggies.
I would pick Piggies. The greatest song of all time, yeah. How could you not?
You have to consider what modern music is now. What type of song do you put into that modern funnel right now?
I'd still go In My Life.
Would you still do
that
one?
It's a ballad. It could be, you know.
If you gave it to the right person, I think that would be a breakout. That's a good one. That's a good.
And there are modern day stars. Like I know Ed Sheeran is in this and other people. They're along for the ride in this movie.
Let's just say Ed Sheeran should stick to music, not acting.
Wow. That was subtle. Wow. All right.
Not a fan.
That's fair. Did you boycott that part of the movie? Did you cover your eyes when he was on?
I just, it's just like I can tell that Danny Boyle, the director, doesn't care about actors because he just let him do what he wanted, and woo!
Yeah.
Not
good. I saw the trailer for this, and I'm intrigued and yet baffled by the concept. So I don't know.
It's almost like a Twilight Zone or Black Box episode, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. You mean Black Matter.
Black Mirror.
Black Mirror. Black Mirror.
Boy, Jesus. The two of you, why don't you go get some old-time, country-time lemonade, sit in your rockers on the porch and scream,
yellow
get off
kids.
My lawn.
Hey, kids. Right. So it's like Black Box, Black Matter, Black Mirror, Black Adderley, Old Black Water. It's like a combination of all those things.
We're Blackbird's, playing Mad Libs.
Blackbird would be a good song, too.
Yeah, right, exactly. It's very contemporary, too.
Yeah,
you know, you could,
the strumming and the guitar work. Yeah, that might be one, too.
That's a good one.
What would your Beatles song be?
I would think, actually, the title of the song yesterday is one that you say to yourself, well, that's going to be, that sounds like a hit, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right?
That song's kind of boring.
You bored with yesterday?
Kind of.
Yeah.
It's lovely.
Yeah.
I think maybe I've just heard it too much. Oh.
Yeah.
Happy Just to Dance with You?
Yeah. Hey.
I don't mean as a title. I'm happy just to dance with you, Patrick. Would you like to dance?
Me and Chucky.
All right.
Coming up with Stories That Matter with Jen DeSalvo from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. So how do people reach you again?
ChicagoFilmTour.com, 312-593-4455. If you come, maybe you can sit with Wendy and her family.
Oh,
I got to do it. I will
bonus.
Do it this summer, I promise, okay. And I'm going to watch Sound of Music.
All right,
we're going to go to the stream, WGN Extra, if you will. Elise Glink is going to hold down the fort with the Wintrust Business Lunch. What's coming up today, Elise?
Hey, guys. We have some cool CNET stories coming up. We've also got Celeste Adams, who's got some information about the new Frank Lloyd Wright Museum and what that's going to look like. And, of course, near and dear to my heart, Dennis Rodkin is in the studio to talk real estate. So off you guys go. Tati bye, as they say.
Tati bye.
Tati bye.